is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome into this Monday edition of the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. I'm Stormy Bonatoni, live from Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas, alongside Michael Lombardi, back with us today after a week away. And you were all over the place last week. I saw you visit Arkansas Hoops. You and Millie were in Colorado. What were some of the highlights?
Well, I got a chance to speak to the Arkansas coaching staff football-wise. Then I went and watched Muss practice over at the Arkansas at his arena. Got to speak to his team, which was fun. And then I went out to Vail, Colorado. Never been before, Stormy. I'm not a skier, but it was incredible. We had a seminar. It was a kind of a gentleman brought a bunch of people, different personalities together to have a kind of a business retreat. I wouldn't even call it a business retreat. These people were amazing. I don't know what the hell I was doing there, but they climb Mount Everest. They do some incredible things. They go and save lives and do different things. And everybody gave a talk and a presentation. It was really humbling and impressive. So I really enjoyed myself. And now it's back to work. I missed you. It's back to come back. All the stuff that was going on around the National Football League, I felt like I was out of touch.
Yeah, I know that you work in a different world, but you're a pretty impressive, cool guy too, Michael. And we did miss you. I was just saying before we caught on the air, it's weird doing the Lombardi Line without the Lombardi. So very grateful to have you back here. And we can recap and get into a lot of the stuff that came out of the combine. There's a lot of news as it pertains to free agency with the new league year coming up in just over a week. But before we get into all of that, we did get some tough news in the sports and sports media world yesterday. Iconic ESPN reporter and NFL insider Chris Mortensen passed away at the age of 72. And I saw you posted on Twitter about him. You called him a legend in the space. What are some things that you reflect on about Chris?
I think it's his integrity. You know, I think he was very honest. He was not afraid to say to you, here's what I'm hearing. Here's what I'm going to report based on my sources. He was upfront. He wasn't trying to avoid any conflict if he had a report that he wanted to go with. And sometimes that created some dissension. But unlike what's going on today, where people are combining sentences from one podcast to another, they're making things up just to get clicks. For me, you know, he was a man of integrity, a man of principle, and he was really someone that you could have a conversation with. Even if you didn't agree on the subject you were having a conversation with, he would listen. And so that was so important. And he did it over a long period of time. I thought his humility when Adam Schefter came in from NFL Network and he embraced Adam and they worked together as a team. You know, most guys would have felt threatened. Most guys would have said, why are we doing this? And yet Mort kind of took a step and embraced it and went forward and still broke stories and still had news, but he wasn't trying to prove himself to anybody. And I admire that about him.
Yeah. And those are some of the things. It was great hearing all of the media world sharing stories and sharing what made him such an icon in the space on social media was not only the way that he cared about getting it right and being kind of the originator of what an insider is in sports media, but the kindness, the human that he was, the genuine person that he was. So, you know, really, really glad that we could share something kind about him because he was somebody who's so important to so many. And Daniel Jeremiah on NFL Network during the combine coverage, when that news broke, he was so emotional just talking about his family and how much he's meant to so many people as a mentor and a kind person in the space. And you know what?
He made Daniel Jeremiah's career.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, when he was working with them, I don't know where they were working together, but he kind of got the sense that Jeremiah should do something bigger than just what he was doing and kind of pushed and made an effort to do that. So, you know, he was about giving back to people. And like I said, he didn't feel threatened when someone came in. So hats off to him. You know, we interviewed Peter King at the Super Bowl. We had no idea he was getting ready to retire. Mm-hmm. And yet he did. And both those guys, you know, you could disagree with some of the things they reported. I thought it was really interesting how Peter finally walked back the deflate gates, that he was led down a stream of misinformation, which we all felt when it was going on was a complete ridiculous story fabricated from the Colts and the Ravens and generated some momentum that some of these non-true stories do.
Yeah, I believe he called that the biggest regret in his career. And we will get to some of that fake news here later on in the Lombardi line. But, you know, based on all of the things that I've heard about Chris Mortensen over the last 24 hours, and I know Peter King as well, if there is one thing that we can all agree on is we love talking football, and that's what they would want us to do here today. So let's get into it. Adam Schefter actually broke some news this morning. Mike Evans signed a two-year, $52 million extension, $32 million with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to remain with the team. The five-time Pro Bowler now heading into his age 31 season. So my dream of him going to the Chiefs dies because I thought that would have been a fun pairing with Patrick Mahomes, but great for him to stay with the team that drafted him back in the day.
You know, I thought when I was out there in the snow, we went dog sledding, which was fabulous. Storm, you got to do it sometime. It's incredible. But when I was out in Colorado and I saw the cap, it went way up, right? I thought, well, what is this going to do to these contracts? Because the increase of the cap is so substantial that all of a sudden the numbers are going to grow. And this contract comes in at $26 million per year with $35 guaranteed, you know, which is really an impressive deal, but it puts him in fourth place in the top five, which is where he belongs. But it didn't get closer to that $30 million number, which I thought it was going to do. So, you know, it's a great deal for Evans. He puts a lot of money in his pocket. When you do a two-year deal, right, the first year doesn't have to be guaranteed because you know you're going to make the team the first year, right? It's the second year. So that's the key number. And, you know, he did a good deal, and the Bucs did a good deal for their team because, you know, Mayfield, I would say this really without being critical of Mayfield, he didn't carry the team. The skilled players really helped, and they needed Evans if they were going to repeat as the South champion.
Well, and with that, though, bringing back Evans at that price should make it easier to bring Baker Mayfield back and be the facilitator of that offense. You imagine Antoine Winfield Jr. ends up getting franchise tagged. And I know it's not for sure that that's the way that things are going to play out. But when you think about the quarterback carousel, there were some rumors over the weekend that maybe the Patriots could have interest in Baker Mayfield. This feels more like a great way to ensure that you bring Baker back.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think we're going to hear, remember, it's Lions season, right, Stormy? So we're going to hear a lot of teams interested in certain players. And that's not coming from the teams. That's coming from the agents trying to create a market, right? They're trying to create a market for their player. And I think Baker obviously is trying to create a market. I saw that, you know, there was one of those salary cap sites and had posted that, you know, this is the contract that he could get somewhere between 40 and 45 million. I mean, if someone's willing to pay Baker Mayfield 40 to 45 million, God bless him. Go ahead. I don't think it moves the needle one inch on your chances of winning a Super Bowl, right? I don't think it moves it at all. I know he had a good year. He didn't have an elite year. There was a four-game losing streak that was going on. He made some horrible decisions, but he also helped them, and his leadership put some things on the table. But this is not going to – signing Baker Mayfield back isn't going to move the needle, in my viewpoint, if they sign him to a ridiculous contract where it limits what they can do around their team.
Also, Michael, moments ago, we expected that this was what was going to take place, but Jason Kelce holding a press conference officially announcing his retirement this morning. So there, we thought that was what was going to happen based on what we heard at the end of the season and his speech to his teammates in the locker room. He kind of walked it back on his podcast and now has made it official that he is retiring after spending his entirety of his career with the Philadelphia Eagles.
And let the free agent bidding, where do you predict he goes? ESPN, Amazon, NBC,
well, he basically
CBS?
Did the Amazon.
What are the odds here? Can we get some of those?
We need to. He basically did the Amazon audition mid-season, right? When he went on during their bye week for Thursday Night Football. So maybe they would automatically be the favorite in that market if we were putting numbers out.
I think they would be, right? You know, I mean, they'd have to create a spot for him, but... But, you know, these pregame shows have more people on them than they actually play in the game. So maybe they just will add one more.
Yeah. Do you think that his absence will impact the tush push of it all?
That's a great question. I don't, because I think a lot of the tush push comes from the power in the lower body of Jalen Hurts and how he's able to keep his feet moving. And the two guards play as, you know, they go wall to wall. They go shoulder to shoulder to push up inside. So I don't think so. I was talking to a coach yesterday at the airport when I landed back from Colorado, who just came into Philadelphia, and we were talking about the tush push and how well they do it. And having competed against the Eagles, he was wondering the same thing too. But I kind of feel like this is more on Hurts' lower body than it is anything.
One area where his impact and the loss will be felt is the leadership standpoint. With him and Fletcher Cox, who it appears he's set to retire, both out the door this year, what kind of a void does that leave in leadership for a team like that that's trying to get back on track this season?
Well, I think what it does a lot here, and this is something that the fans don't notice, but when Kelce comes to the line and, you know, they have the quarterback draw as part of their audible package and he sees a front or he sees a blitz, he's the one directing the traffic, right? He's the one that, you know, defensive coordinators are always playing the chess game against Kelce. It's not against the quarterback. It's like, hey, we play Philly. You got to give Kelce something he didn't prepare for. That's a unique quality. That's something that's hard to replace. And so they're going to have to find that experience and that ability to make great decisions quickly, like Kelce was going to do. I think they'll miss him more mentally than they will physically.
That's a great point. And you know that Eagles fans expect wins. So we'll see ultimately how they're able to fill that gap. We're going to take our first time out of the day. But when we come back here on the Lombardi Line, we did have some news come in from the San Francisco 49ers. They found their man for defensive coordinator and lots of stuff coming out of the NFL Combine. So many players, in addition to the stars who elected not to throw and not to work out, deciding that they didn't want to participate in certain drills, run the 40-yard dash. What is the value of the NFL Combine in 2024 and beyond? We'll get into it all when we come back on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
If you haven't already, make sure you check out the new and improved VSiN.com. Our fresh new website's got a new look, enhanced navigation, a mobile-first focus, and improved functionality. But all that same great daily content, including right now, conference tournament betting guides with odds, trends, predictions, and picks for all of the conferences in college hoops. Make sure you check out VSiN.com today. And Michael, you were just saying we got a little bit of news that was coming off of the Pat McAfee show, Adam Schefter in his regular spot, regarding Chris Jones and some other potential players who could get tagged. What's the word?
Well, you know, Adam seems to think Chris Jones is going to get done, and I think everybody does that as well. I don't think anybody in the league thinks he's going to make it to free agency, and if he does, you know, they're going to eventually re-sign him. So I think they kind of know what his market is. And then, you know, Brian Burns, Justin Aduku, and I think there's, Josh Allen, not the quarterback, Josh Allen, the defensive end, is going to, if they don't get a deal done today, they will get franchised. Yeah. So, you know, it's so rare for a defensive lineman to make it to the open market. You know, Christian Wilkins, because of the cap situation in Miami and because they've seemed just completely, you know, down the Tua road that they're going to sign Tua, you know, he's going to make it to the open market. That contract is going to be huge. Someone's going to pay him big time money.
Yeah, we'll see how some of these things play out. We should get a lot of that news today with the franchise tag deadline ultimately coming up tomorrow. We also, Michael, had some news over the weekend that the 49ers found their man for defensive coordinator, promoting internally Nick Sorensen. And for all of the discussion about Brandon Staley, who also interviewed for the defensive coordinator job, well, he does not get the coordinator role. He was hired as the associate head coach. What did you make of that news when you heard it come through?
You know, when I heard it come through, I never really was on the Staley going to the 49ers as the coordinator, because Staley's a three-man line defensive coach from the Vic Fangio school. Now, obviously, all three-man lines become four-man lines and they come down, but philosophically, it's not the same. It's a completely different world than the world the 49ers live in. And I think one of the things that became problematic for Steve Wilks was he tried to learn the 49ers system and he tried to adjust his scheme within there. And that caused a lot of confusion. It caused some discomfort. It's a hard thing to do. It's one thing. When Vic Fangio is now going to Philadelphia, they didn't tell him to run a certain scheme. He's running his scheme. Whereas when Wilkes went to San Francisco, they put some restrictions on what scheme to run. So, you know, that makes sense why Sorensen would be promoted. But I think the presence of Staley there is to help guide Sorensen become a coordinator, to help him strategically, not scheme-wise, strategically, getting ready to play the Bengals, let's say. Okay, here's how we wanted to defend them. This is what we did. Could you incorporate that into what you do? And I think that's it. It's kind of I don't want to call it a mentor, but I would call it like an advisor role, because obviously Staley's still getting paid and he goes to a great organization with a chance to win, but he's not going to be calling the game. And I don't think he's going to be encouraging Kyle Shanahan to go for it on fourth down in his own 20. So, you know, I think this is more of help this young coach become a better defense coordinator. And for the 49ers, it allows them to have more continuity within the scheme that they all know and they all really respect. When you're the outsider coming in, and, you know, you have to rely on the other people to teach you, you don't have as much clout within the room. And then secondly, you know, when things start to break down, it becomes harder to fix. And then you get the rolling of the eyes. You get the under, oh, what's going to happen here? What's going to happen there? And I think ultimately this will be a move where staying in-house for Kyle might be the best thing ever.
Yeah, Sorensen was the defensive passing game and nickels and corners coach, but the first time as a coordinator, although his third year in San Francisco. Staley, by the way, replaces Anthony Lynn, who left for San Francisco to go to Washington to be their run game coordinator and running backs coach, but had a ton of success that year with the Rams in 2020 when that defense was the best in the NFL. And as a head coach early on with the Chargers, things were certainly looking up until they didn't. So maybe this is a good situation for Brandon Staley to get back on track in a little bit of a lesser pressure role. But to your point, helping out a first-time coordinator in this role. What did you make, by the way, of the thought process that the 49ers were trying potentially to get Steve Spagnuolo? That was a report from ESPN's Dan Graziano. I would have loved that, but of course he signs the extension with Kansas City.
Well, I think it's a call you have to make. And I think, you know, the probability of getting him isn't very good, but you see that his contract's expired. Now, remember, they would have had to wait a week after his contract expired to even have a conversation with him. So that's the rules. If you end the season without the playoffs, you have to wait 2 weeks. If you're in the playoffs, you have to wait a week after your contract. So the Chiefs were always in the best bargaining position. And, you know, it would make sense the 49ers would want to see if they could get someone. Now, that would have meant a radical change to their defense. They would have not been able to go to Spagnuolo and say, hey, look, Steve, we want you to run our defense. No. Steve's going to run what he wants to run. So it makes sense to make the call. But I think sometimes we get caught up in the call, the checking, the gauge of interest, as opposed to really being able to go after them. Like, it isn't like this story's out there, but it's a call, phone call. There's no negotiation. All it did was help Steve gain more money because there would be a market. But I don't think you need to tell the Chiefs there was going to be a market for his services if he was available.
Yep, most decorated coordinator now in NFL history with all those Super Bowl rings he's racked up. Now let's go out to Indy with the NFL Combine officially in the books. None of those three top quarterback candidates, Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, elected to do the workouts at the Combine. Caleb Williams, never shy throughout this process to do things his own way, became the first player to go out to Indy, be invited and not participate in the medical portion. Similarly, Jaden Daniels, while he did the medical, he didn't do the measurements. Both players saying that they're going to do those things at their respective pro days. Is this concerning at all for the evaluation process of these quarterbacks in the draft, or do you simply think that the importance for top players has evolved where some of these things have just become unnecessary? What's your viewpoint on things like this at the Combine?
Well, I think, look, you know, the top players, especially quarterbacks, they're reluctant to work out. The balls don't feel right in their hand. You know, the receivers, the routes are kind of different. You're adjusting on the fly. You could look like you're an inaccurate thrower because of the receivers more than your arm. But I don't think it really matters. You're going to go back and watch the tape of the player, right? The quarterback position, you're going to watch all of J.J. McCarthy's third downs. You're going to watch all of Jaden Daniels. You know, it's really about watching the athleticism, the footwork, and the arm live. And these guys, because of the agents, they want to go back home and do it at home because it's more comfortable. The receivers that they know are there. They control the workout. No one runs it but the quarterback coach of the prospect hired by the agents. So it's more of a controlled atmosphere. For me, you know, what, 10 players may not work out that are over the top. You're just going to have to go to their campus and work them out. You know, you'll go to LSU. It'll make NFL Network happy. They'll go to LSU Pro Day, and it'll be a huge event. So you got to get there anyway. For the core players that are want to move up in the draft, working out in the combine is still the best way.
Yeah, and so that's, I think, the point is for the players – like a Caleb Williams, for example, who can't really increase his value. He's already projected to be the top overall pick in this draft. All you could do is potentially take a knock to what your value is versus players that are really trying to increase that stock. They think that they could have a really good 40 time or do really well in the drills, that they could start to separate themselves in a different way. That's when it's important. Like Marvin Harrison Jr. didn't participate in the workouts either. Also, he didn't make the podium at the assigned time that he was supposed to. Is there anything to read into that from a character standpoint that, you know, he was expected to be somewhere that he's not?
Well, like father, like son, I think didn't Marvin not give very many interviews at all during his time? I think he was one of the hardest guys to get to. I don't think I've heard Marvin Harrison speak two words. Have you, Stormy? I mean, really. You know, I don't remember him doing much talking when he played for the Colts. Great player, Hall of Fame player. But, you know, I think ultimately Marvin Harrison Jr., the interesting part about this, Stormy, is him not, if he's not going to work out, period. Like, is he going to not work out at all? You know, and I think the NBA sees some of these guys do this who are lottery picks and they get away with it. It's a little harder in the NFL. People want to have 40 times on you. People want to have kind of backgrounds on you in case, you know, you come in the league and you're available for trade. You got to have some kind of history. Just because you're going to be a top four pick, that doesn't mean when you become a free agent, you know, where's our information on them? And I think ultimately this is a bad trend. This trend of not doing anything, not at the combine, but completely anything, is not a good thing. And I don't think not many people can get away with it. Now, maybe Harrison thinks he can get away with it. Well, we'll see if Malik Nabers has a great pro day.
Yeah, that's
it. Could that happen? Could that come into effect?
Could that be something that moves the needle on somebody like that? Sure. And it is a very interesting trend. We'll see if that's something that catches on down the line. But what Marvin Harrison Jr. surely will tell people is turn on the tape and turn on the however many games that I played and was torching defensive backs and being a problem from that standpoint. And that Caleb Williams said essentially the same thing, is that I've played 30 plus games. Look at me in live action. And we'll get to Caleb Williams because he had plenty of comments on the podium. He was doing the rounds, and I think he might have actually impressed some people, because the big knock on Caleb Williams has been his attitude, has been the way that he has talked about certain things, and he walked back a little bit of that narrative. Plenty more to come on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Put the VSiN experts to work for you and start betting smarter with a VSiN Pro subscription. Sign up on a VSiN Pro annual subscription today. You'll get your first year for only $199 instead of the typical price of $240. Just use that promo code Lombardi. Get VSiN Pro access to everything we do for the entire year, and that includes our daily best bets with a leaderboard to see which VSiN expert has the hot hand, betting splits to show you where the money and bets are moving for every game, betting systems, premium analysis, and 24/7 video access, plus our upcoming March Madness betting guide with best bets for every game and round of the tournament. Remember, use the promo code Lombardi. That'll get you your first year of VSiN Pro access for $199. Sign up today, vsin.com/subscribe. Rolling along on the Lombardi Line, continuing to dive into all of the news and notes that came out of the NFL Combine. Now that we have our guy Michael back in his rightful chair. And Michael, Caleb Williams, for all the talk that we heard about him being picky about which team he goes to and requesting a trade if he's unhappy with that situation, or getting the CBA changed so that he can get some sort of ownership in whatever team drafts him, I thought that he did a pretty good job this week of calming down some of those narratives, saying he would be extremely excited if the Bears or anybody took him. And to me, it was just a little bit of a reminder that some of the stuff that we've heard about Caleb Williams, we do need to take with a little bit of a grain of salt, because they had always come from other places. They'd always come from the media. They'd always come from his dad, who is like a stage mom type of a parent at this point, with everything that he believes Caleb Williams is the greatest human being that has ever walked the earth and the most talented player ever to hit the NFL. So I thought it was nice to hear from Caleb Williams and see a positive side of his personality this week.
Me too, because I think anytime you can get, even when you have direct communication, people screw it up. I mean, look at us on the GM shuffle.
Yeah.
You know, we had a news aggregate take two conversations that I had and combine it into one to spin it out so he could get clicks. So I think anytime you can visually talk to a person and hear exactly what they're saying in the context of what it's being said, too often on Twitter, people say something that's completely out of context and it's applied later. And I think it's really unfair to the person. And I think it's unfair to Caleb. Like I said all fall, I'm not going to buy anything that Caleb says that I read on that great source called Twitter. Mm-hmm. Until I hear him say it himself. And I think that's part of what's going on behind the scenes right now in the National Football League, is people are trying to get to know Caleb Williams. And he made it clear that he will take a physical. He's just not going to take one at the combine. If you bring him in, and let's say the Bears bring him in for a physical, and you know they're going to give him a physical. Now, if the Atlanta Falcons call him for a physical, I doubt if he's going to go. But mm-hmm. You know, the Falcons could say to him, look, we're trying to trade up to get you. Will you come in for that? You know, and how many teams will tell him that tale? For me, it's probably going to have to be the Bears are going to have to share the medical information with all 32 teams when they bring him in, or whatever team ends up with the first pick. It'll be the Bears. But the Bears, if they do draft him, they'll, you know, they may have to be required by the league to share that medical information.
And at least what he has said publicly as of now is that whatever teams he does visit, he will do that medical with them. But his big sticking point was that there are 32 teams in the league. There's only one of him. He's only going to get drafted to one place. And so I think what a lot of people maybe don't realize about the combine is you do that medical, which is a pretty lengthy process out there in Indianapolis. And then like every other team has their own medical doctors that they want to do their own personal evaluation. So it is a longer process. I understand him being the, you know, consensusly thought of number one overall pick right now, that he would want to maybe push that down a little bit and do things his way. Coming out of Williams' formal sit down with the Bears this week, and that included their general manager, Ryan Poles, Matt Eberflus, offensive coordinator, pass game coordinator, and their assistant GM, as well as the president, Kevin Warren. Albert Breer reported coming out of that sit down that what they saw from Williams in that setting was an easy confidence, a player who was comfortable in his own skin and not concerned much with what other people thought of him. And Breer said that last part is key because the Bears have tried to drill down on making sure the person they pick can handle the pressure of the spotlight of the Chicago market, and that he checked that box. He's a massive favorite to be the number one overall pick to the Chicago Bears. Do you think once they ultimately see him in person and they do the workout at USC and they do the visit, that everything will end up sunshine and rainbows and that he'll be a Chicago Bear?
I don't think he needed that meeting to tell you that Caleb Williams is his own man, nor does he care what other people think, right?
Yeah.
I kind of got that sense sitting in this chair in New Jersey. So good for the Bears. I think now it's, you know, I think it's pretty clear the Bears are going to draft a quarterback. I mean, without saying it, he's saying it. We saw the reaction of Justin Fields when his agent told him there was a team interested in him. So I think the ball is moving behind the scenes here. And I wouldn't be surprised by the time free agency starts next week that we don't have a trade. I don't know who it'll be. I don't know what it'll be for. I don't know how many teams are interested in it as of this point, but I do expect this to happen. And when that happens, and when they do trade Justin Fields, then I think it's a lot easier. Well, the Bears have made it clear their intention. We can skirt the issue. I'm sure we'll have to wait 12 minutes for the commissioner to announce him as the first pick in the draft on draft day. But nonetheless, we'll be able to move on with our lives.
And we have seen some line movement in the market for where Justin Fields is going to take his next snap, Michael, because not too long ago, Justin Fields was on the St. Brown Bros podcast and he was asked specifically about Atlanta. He spoke pretty glowingly about them from that standpoint. Then we heard from Raheem Morris on the podium last week that not only want a team, not only want a player for a fit for the team and for the coaches, but for the city. And so people are drawing that Atlanta connection with Fields. But then Adam Schefter on NFL Live said, quote, "I don't think the market is quite as robust as the Bears and Justin Fields would like it to be. There's a lot of speculation on Atlanta. I think Atlanta would be somewhat of a surprise right now to trade for Justin Fields." And since then, he went from as high as minus 450 to go to the Falcons, fell quickly to $3. Last check now, minus 270. So still an odds-on favorite to go to Atlanta, but a lot of movement with that comment from Schefter and others.
Well, I mean, but let's go back, Stormy. Let's take a moment here to let this breathe for a second, right? Wasn't Schefter the one saying that they were expected to get a first-round pick for him?
Yeah. Yeah, he's the one.
When he said that now, when he said that, the market moved. He moved that market. That went up to what, minus 450 or something? Yep. None of us believed it. In fact, when we had Dan Graziano on our show in Las Vegas, he was shaking his head. He didn't want to go against what Schefter said, but he and I were both saying to one another, where is the market, right? Mm-hmm. And I think there's something to that. I think there's a media perception of Justin Fields. There's a Pro Football Focus perception of Justin Fields. There's a Bears perception of Justin Fields. And then there's the rest of the league, which if you listen to the way I do it and explain it, I think I would be I'm not in the minority here. Usually I am, but this one I don't think I am at all. I mean, I've talked to a lot of people about this. I'm not in the minority on this one. I think a lot of people see what I see on the tape. So I had a hard time believing somebody's going to be willing to give up a high pick for a one-year contract and an unsure quarterback that can throw the ball. So now he's walking it back. He started this mess. He's the one who said they were going to get a lot for him.
So that's the interesting part of this, though, from a value standpoint, right? Because this is good for any of those other teams that actually do have interest in Fields. If they're not getting all this love from other teams and other competition from other teams, you're lessening the value that you have to pay for immediately in terms of assets when you know that you're going to have to compensate him a year down the line if you want to sign him. Meanwhile, so we talk about how the steam on the Falcons has gone down for Justin Fields. The steam's beginning to rise on Kirk Cousins potentially as somebody who could go to the Atlanta Falcons. The Vikings have shifted from a minus 250 favorite to return Cousins to $2. So they're still the odds on favorite to retain him. But Atlanta now plus 190. And he has the connection, of course, to Raheem Morris from their time at Washington.
And Zach Robinson runs the offense that he's run. So it's really a familiarity into what he wants to do. So it fits. And I don't know, you know, they're talking about not letting Justin Jefferson go. And we know he'll get north of $30 million. Tyreek Hill's at $30 million per year. And then I think Cousins' market is going to be robust because the tape doesn't lie. He's a good player on the tape. He played for $35 million last year. He carried a ton of debt with him. You know, he put the Vikings in a tough spot, but he also has played well enough to where, you know, you can't overlook his numbers. He's hard to replace. And if you're the Atlanta Falcons, why would I give up anything of substance for Fields and still not knowing if I have a quarterback, right? What's the worst thing you want to do in free agency? Is you don't want to sign a player at a position and still need the position, right?
Yeah.
You want to solve a problem. You don't want to do that. And oftentimes we'll sign a player and still need a player once 2 months into it. Kirk Cousins solves that problem. Justin Fields doesn't. As much as everybody thinks he's a great player with his 10 wins on his tool belt. But the reality of it is if you're the Falcons, I don't have to give up anything but money to get Cousins. Now, I may have to overpay for him, but I've got Zach Robinson. I got Raheem Morris here. We know him. We've got good skill. We can sell Kyle Pitts, Drake London. We got Bijan Robinson. Got a good offensive line in front of him. Now, I think if he goes to the Falcons, that shifts their number in terms of winning. I think that'll move it a little bit. If Baker Mayfield went, it wouldn't.
Fields has all those buzzwords of like upside and potential and really high ceiling and all of those things, but like yet to be a proven commodity. And at least with Kirk Cousins, even at 36 years old, coming off an injury, you know what he is. And he's coming off one of the best years that he has had before that injury. So it's a very interesting conversation. Also makes you wonder what the Vikings will do at quarterback if it's not Kirk Cousins. We've got to step aside looking at some division futures when we come back. Gridiron Goldilocks. We'll explain what that is in a moment.
Yeah.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This week on DraftKings Sportsbook, new customers can deposit $5 and get a no-sweat bet up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet loses. Download the app and use the promo code VSIN when you sign up, V-S-I-N. DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours. Michael Lombardi and Stormy Bonantoni with you live on the Lombardi Line, VSIN, the Sports Betting Network. And DraftKings has officially opened up some NFL division markets for 2024. So already,
like it,
even though it's only March, Michael, we're already getting more futures markets on the board, which is awesome. And so we want to do an exercise that our producer Elliot Bowman came up with called Gridiron Goldilocks. We're going to look at the odds that are out there. And I want you to tell me for each of these teams if the odds are maybe a little too long, too pricey, or if they're just right. Does that sound good to you?
And that's to win the division, so I'm clear on this, right? This
Correct.
Is not Super Bowl conference champ. This is just the AFC, East, West, North, South, whatever this division they're in.
Correct. We're going to stick with the divisions here. If you do want to get frisky and look at some of those other odds, feel free. It's your world. I'm just living in it. But we're going to start with the AFC North because for potential powerhouse teams, honestly, in 2023, this division was the first division since 1935 that saw every team have a winning record, and that's with three of the four teams needing backup quarterback play. I mean, the Steelers had three different quarterbacks. The Browns had five, to put that into perspective for you. But let's start with the Ravens here, who are the lone team with stable quarterback play, had an MVP season for Lamar Jackson. They won the division. They are the number one seed in the conference. They are plus 105 in the division for 2024. Are the odds too short, too long, or just right?
I think these odds are a little bit too short. I don't see them automatically repeating because, look, Mike McDonald did a tremendous job, and they have going to have some, there's going to be, as we saw last year with Philadelphia, there's going to be some regression when you change coordinators. It's not easy. They lost a lot of coaches off their staff. Plus, you know, they're not as talented as we lend to think they are. And offensively, you know, they were great last year, you know, but we're going to see if they can duplicate that again. And so I think look, the Ravens are competitive. They got Lamar Jackson, MVP of the league. But I think, to me, you're giving away a little bit too much here at 105. I think those odds are too long there. I mean, too short.
Yeah, and I mean, to your point, a team that could have a little bit of regression here after an awesome regular season this year and now having to contend with the Cincinnati Bengals, who are going to get their franchise quarterback and Joe Burrow back healthy, ideally see if he can make it for an entire year. The Bengals are sitting at plus 170. Jake Browning certainly kept them afloat late in the year. They played much better than I thought they would. Still ended up over 500, but last in the division. Cincinnati plus 170 in the AFC North next year. Too short, too long, or just right?
I think it's too long. I like this Bengal team. I think they'll be better defensively. Everybody talks about the Burrow injury, and I think Jake Browning did a really good job of filling in for Burrow, and they got their offensive line play better. Their offense wasn't the issue. Their defense was, and the young safeties were a problem. The defensive front was a problem. I think they've got to correct that, but if they do, and you got to believe Lou Amoromo will. He didn't even get an interview this offseason for a head coaching job. So I think they can really improve. I think these are too long at plus 170. I think the Ravens and the Bengals should be clustered together closer.
Well, and do you think, since you mentioned Mike McDonald moving on from Baltimore, do you think that there's anything to the Bengals losing their offensive coordinator to a head coaching job, or no, because Zach Taylor is still the one calling plays ultimately?
He called the plays. He was in the, you know, Zach Taylor probably never went to a defensive meeting. You know, he's the offensive coordinator there. I know Brian Callahan got the head coaching job at Tennessee, and congratulations to Brian. I'm happy for him. But, you know, he helped Zach Taylor set up the game plan, but Zach Taylor was calling the game and running the offensive meetings. So I think without being disrespectful to Brian, he's replaceable from within. Whereas when you lose Mike McDonald, you're losing the guy that was in that room coordinating the defense, handling all the elements of their team, and getting the players to play at a high level. I mean, look, Kyle Van Noy sitting on the Pat McAfee show in September comes in and gets 9 sacks. Javion Clowney has one of his best seasons in the last 3 years, with, in spite of the shoulder and the ankle and the knee problems that he had. So I think he's a hard guy to replace.
We're playing a game of Gridiron Goldilocks here on the Lombardi Line, seeing if these division odds in the AFC North are too long, too short, or just right. And now let's go to the Cleveland Browns, who, as I mentioned off the top of the segment, saw 5 different quarterbacks taking snaps. Joe Flacco ends up winning Comeback Player of the Year, Stefanski Coach of the Year, for the way that they overcame the back end of the year despite losing a guy they paid a whole lot of money to in Deshaun Watson, and his play not being very good for the majority of the time that he was available. The defense was excellent at home, really not anywhere that you would expect them to be on the road. Plus 550 next year in the division. Too long, too short, or just right?
I think this is a little too long. I got to believe they're going to get better defensively, you know, just because they'll have some cap room too to operate with, which I think is critical. I know they're going to have to fix some of the things they have in terms of where they are with their offense. You know, they hire a new offensive coordinator. They're going to take Stefanski's not going to do all the play calling. But this is a team that can only improve. And at 550, it seems like it's a little bit rich. Now, they don't have a ton of cap room, so that's a concern. They've got to re-sign some guys. So, you know, and they're going to have to get the quarterback to play at the level he played even better than that Baltimore game, where it was his best game of the season. I mean, for some reason, they have not been able to get Deshaun Watson to play anywhere near where he played in Houston when he was almost carrying that franchise, even though they weren't winning very many games. He was the driving force. So, you know, I think 550 is still a little too high here, Stormy. I think it's a little bit of a problem.
It still blows my mind that the best half of football we saw from Deshaun Watson was the game he got injured. Like, that was the game that knocked him out for the rest of the season, was his best performance that we had seen from him in a really long time. Also interesting, I didn't realize this just thinking about recent history, because I remember they made the playoffs a couple years ago, that they still didn't win the division. The Browns have not won the AFC North since the division realigned in 2002. Their last division crown was in the AFC Central in 1989. So it has been a hot minute since they've had a division title. What about the Pittsburgh Steelers here?
I was there. And this is the first time since 89, Stormy. This is the first year since 89 that the Browns have finished ahead of the Steelers in the standings.
Remarkable. That is crazy to think about. But again, all of these teams in the division, the first division since 1935 to have every single team finish above 500. And we know that old motto for Mike Tomlin's teams, who sit at 12-1 in the division this year. Questions at quarterback. We keep on hearing a lot of positive things still about Kenny Pickett, but the belief in him and wanting to sign Mason Rudolph. But the expectation is that they're going to go try to grab a veteran or someone to compete for that QB1 position. 12-1, too long, too short, or just right?
I think it's just right, Stormy. I mean, look, if they could sign Kirk Cousins, which they're not going to do, they have $8 million of cap room right now. So they have no room to really sign him. And so they're going to bring in somebody, whether it's a Ryan Tannehill on a make use contract. You know, I just think they're not giving away the starting job. They're going to say to somebody, hey, Mason, you can compete with Pickett. We'll pay you as this number with a lot of incentives to get to another number if you're the starter. But I have a hard time of the things we're talking about thinking that they can win the North. As good as Tomlin is, I'm sure they'll get better on defense. I mean, T.J. Watt, when you look at the breakdown of when he doesn't play defensively for them as opposed to when he does play, so you're always concerned about that. I kind of have a hard time with this one. I think 12-1 is the perfect number. I love the Steelers, but the quarterback position, they can't hide it. I think Arthur Smith will help. I definitely do. I really believe Arthur Smith will help, but I don't know if there's a talent enough to help him with at the quarterback. They've got the skill players. They don't have the quarterback.
If they got Russell Wilson or Justin Fields, since you're saying Kirk Cousins is off the table from a price standpoint, if they got one of those two guys, how much do you think these odds would be cut down, if at all?
I don't think it would be cut down at all because both guys, I mean, Fields has won 10 games in his career and Wilson has struggled. I mean, look, you're not going to get a better offensive designer than Sean Payton. Arthur Smith's not as good. I mean, they're kind of similar. And if Russell wasn't delivering, now you could say Russell had decent numbers and maybe he could. You know, I think a 12-1 is the right number if Russell. I that's the guy that's perfect for them. Because Russell would cost them the minimum salary. Russell's not going to make any more money. They're going to waive him. His contract's going to go on that. And then he's going to play for the minimum. Because anything he plays above the minimum, you have to give it back to the Broncos anyway.
So that's a good to note, though. If you think that they are going to get one of these quarterbacks, the way that that number would move is from perception, not really maybe the reality of the situation. We're resetting for hour two on the Lombardi Line. When we come back, it's lying season, ladies and gentlemen.